Welcome to DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that is thanks to our sponsor this week, New Relic. They are the people making that possible. We really appreciate that. Of course, DLC is the show all about gaming in its many forms. Games played on integrated circuits, games played on tables. I'm Jeff Cannata, and I'm joined by my co-host slash nemesis, the tiny pebble in my shoe, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, off the top of the show, so it doesn't get buried, congratulations to you. You and Garnet Lee do this other show called We Can Confirmed, and you guys just had your 200th episode. We just had our second. This is episode 3. You guys did 200. Congratulations. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you. Well, we're going to get to that person that you just mentioned in a second. But first, I want to say, what is DLC? This week, of course, DLC is your dose of long-form Cannata. Distracted loudly by Christian.
Perfect.
But also this week, we're lucky because DLC is also Davison lifting the conversation because we have none other than John Davison from First for Gamers here joining us. John, Hello. Welcome.
Hello. I can actually hear you this time.
That's good, yes.
I had a bit of a disaster when I called in on your first show.
Indeed it was. We got you on Skype instead of the 1982 cellular phone that you were using.
Skype is far more reliable than AT&T, apparently.
Right. We also have a little surprise that Christian already ruined. So that's fun.
I teased it. I didn't say that he was on the show, Jeff. You are
because
ruining it now.
TLC also means discussion with Lee contributing.
Oh my. I was wondering how you're going to get that worked out.
Garnet Lee also. So we got a foursome, at least for a little while. Garnet has to cut out a little early today, but welcome, Garnet, to my GD show.
Oh, well, how about that? Sounds awesome. And by the way, everyone listening, sorry that I'm taking up your phone slot. I will duck out and let you call in because you can call into the show here later at about 11:30 to the call-in number 512-518-5714.
Thank you, Garnet. That was very, very nice of you to tell that. Yes, we will want your feedback on the show. You can hang out in the IRC, of course, which is happening at 5x5.tv/live. That call-in number again, 512-518-5714. But the first thing we're going to do, well, first of all, I want to say this makes me happy because John and Garnet, you know, these guys were the beginning of video game podcasting, and to unite them here on our little corner of the internet is really fun. So thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you being here.
Don't make us sound like old fogies now.
Oh, I have to say one other thing before we start. And this is honestly the last thing I'll say about football. But at Runner Matt wanted me to say that I'm the best podcaster in the game. When you put me with sorry podcaster like at Spicer, that's the result you're going to get.
Hey, Jeff, do you remember the long game that Del Rio was playing trolling you when he had you wear a You Mad Bro shirt when we did a video for him? What a long troll he pulled off. That's fantastic.
Well, yeah, well done. Anyway, that's all I'll say about that. We're talking video games, and we got some interesting news this week, so let's get right to the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week. Story of the week, it's the story of the week. I love that. Now I'm actually pitching to myself recorded. It's still terrible. I love it so much. All right, guys. The story of the week is where we try to convince one another of what the most important story of the week was. I have a feeling what everybody is going to have a consensus on this week because there was a pretty major story. But I'm going to let John Davison kick things off. What do you think is the most important thing we need to talk about this week?
Nintendo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about Nintendo? That it's a cereal now?
Yeah, they wish, huh? Well, so Nintendo, they had a pretty bad week. Mm-hmm. The Wii U, apparently not many people buying it. They cut their forecasts for the Wii U from 9 million, which honestly was pretty conservative to start with, down to 2.8 million. They had an 18% stock drop. And then just everybody in the world seemed to just pile onto them all week. So there's a lot of ground we could cover there.
There is indeed, and I certainly would agree that this is the story of the week. It's hard to deny that this is a major piece of news. Iwata, of course, saying that A, he's not stepping down. He will not relinquish the reins at Nintendo, although a lot of people thought maybe he should. It sort of seems like the Japanese thing to do, to sort of fall on his sword. But he's also saying that Nintendo is thinking about a new business structure. That's a quote, thinking about new business structure, which is, pretty significant talk. I mean, I think everybody around the internet is giving their thoughts about what Nintendo should do business-wise. We had Garnett and I and the guys on We Can Confirm had a big episode about it this week as well. But I kind of want to have our discussion be a little less about what they should do from a business perspective and more about what you personally want from Nintendo. So, John, I'm curious, like, you've got kids. Do you have a Wii U right now?
We have an original Wii. I don't have a Wii U. Because the kids just weren't interested enough in that stuff anymore. I think, Nintendo, I think you've got to call it arrogance now, just felt that, the success, they're exhibiting a lot of what we saw from Sony back in 2007, which was just this, well, we've got this audience and they'll do whatever we want, basically. And, it's taken something as drastic as this for them to start acknowledging that maybe the audience doesn't want what they're building and wants to do something else. And I think people have been talking about, you've got to look at smartphones, you've got to look at where the audience is and take your content there rather than insisting on just building something and assuming that everyone is going to show up, because it doesn't work like that anymore.
John, question. Do you think it's arrogance by Nintendo? Because I would agree that in 06 or whenever it was, 05, that Sony was arrogant with the PlayStation 3. But for Nintendo, I almost feel like it borders on ignorance more than arrogance, where they've been doing something, going Maverick or Blue Ocean or whatever you want to call it now for a while. And I don't know if they understand the full video game landscape. Do you think they're just overly cocky in what they're doing? Or they don't know what they're doing, or a mix of the two? Like,
I think it's a mix of the two. I mean, and the fact that Iwata's not going to step down, I think, is pretty disgraceful. They need to shake everything up. But I think what that exhibits is that there's still a very big difference between the cultures of big Western and Eastern companies and the way that they're run, and the fact that, we're going to pull ourselves out of this, and this is the way we're going to work, and this is the way it's going to happen. Meanwhile, I think what's happened online and in the last 5 years particularly is that the audience is fully in charge when it comes to any kind of entertainment, and there's a lot of companies that are messing it up, and not just in video games, but I think now we've seen, I mean, when even Sony has completely been like, you know what, we got it all wrong, sorry. Now we're going to get it right. Please come back. And I think, there was a lot, what Sony benefited from was a lot of affection. And I think where Nintendo will be okay is that if anyone in gaming has a sort of an audience where everyone just wants to root for them, it's them. They can't squander that.
Yeah.
John, play a little alternate history for me, if you will. Remember back when we were still even recording down on the fifth floor, we had pretty strong indication that Nintendo was going to quick up a HD version of the Wii. How do you think the landscape, how do you think this all would have played out if they had, instead of mothballing that and just sitting back on the strength of the Wii sales, how do you think this would have played out had they gone forward with that HD Wii?
I don't know, because I think part of it has been, the Wii U, I think, just confused the hell out of everybody. And I think what's more important than what's happened in the Wii is the fact that the 3DS was the best-selling console on Earth at the end of last year, and it still wasn't able to pull them out of a hole. I mean, and they were discounting stuff. I mean, the reason it was so huge, as much as the fact that there were some great games and there was Zelda and there was a great Mario game, and these things were discounted like crazy, right? I mean, like, you could get a 3DS XL really cheap at Target. And I think that was some, I think that was indicative of how even retail had lost confidence in Nintendo stuff, in that they had to like slash the price on a lot of stuff to get people like to keep the momentum going. I think, you know, I think they confused people with the, you know, with the console you plug into the TV. And that brand just lost its luster. I mean, I mean the Wii HD, we were talking about it. That would have been what, Garnet? 2007?
Yeah, I think it was 7 or 8, yeah.
So you're saying if they'd have had an HD console in the previous generation, is that what you're asking? If they'd have had something comparable to the 360 at the same time as the 360?
Right. Well, no, I mean, more so if they had struck with that and then that had put them on par with the, you know, current display technology, and they wouldn't have had to add the HD, which I do think was a compelling piece to them of bringing out. I think that by the time they got to the Wii U, they realized that they had made a misstep and really needed to get, you know, up to date. I think that the adoption of HD TVs happened faster than whatever their brain trust had projected, especially in the West. And they realized all of a sudden that they were significantly behind the curve and needed to do a catch up. And then that catch up became the Wii U. And to me, I've always felt that, you know, the gamepad was something that was an interesting idea. There was also them sort of looking at tablets and wondering how to deal with that. And they were feeling rushed and put together a concept that didn't have time to really be matured inside their development plans, because they really needed to get something out to market. Because, I mean, you can see where with the raw prototype features, if the Wii U is a prototype and it had another year or two under development to be turned into a final product, you can see, oh, well, there's a lot of interesting stuff they were working on here. But there are just some fundamental things in the hardware level that once it was out and was out with consumers, they said, well, you know, why does this work like this? Why do you only have a one touch screen? Why do I have the limited battery life that I have? Why do I have the limitations on where I can take the tablet part?
So, Garnet, going back to the question that Jeff asked John, do you own a Wii U? And I think I know the answer. And if not, what would it take other than a price cut? You know, like, you guys talked about it some on Week and confirmed them, and I don't want to rehash that. But, you know, what would it take you or, you know, your friend or your friends with families for you to recommend a Wii U at this point? Is there anything that could be done where you're like, take the plunge, this is the right system for you, if, or would it never be that use case scenario?
Oh, there's already people I would say that for. I mean, look, there is absolutely no denying the excellence of Nintendo first party. We can lament, you know, we can lament the lack of innovation all we want to, but when it comes down to it, there still is. I mean, this is the discussion we had on Week in Confirm where we were talking about Rayman versus Mario. Mario is still Mario, and those games are still superlative, and they are the games that you want to have. And I still want Smash Brothers. I mean, though, to counter your disclaimer, I don't think you can say other than a price cut, because for me, the price cut is actually pretty much it. I just don't see the value as a Nintendo playing Nintendo machine at the current price. It needs to me to be $200. At $200, it's an instantaneous buy for me, because then I can go out and buy the games that I want to, and combined with the games and the console, I'm at a price point that I think, okay, you know what, this is reasonable for me to sit at home and play these games.
Didn't they go ahead, Jeff.
No, I go ahead. You've fallen up on that. Go ahead.
I thought they did I'm not trying to be like, gotcha. I thought, didn't they do a $250 holiday bundle that came with the HD Wind Waker?
And yeah, they totally did.
Was that not compelling? Like, I was so close to pulling the trigger on that, but I still didn't. It was close to that price point. I mean, was that not compelling enough?
That's one of the same problem as the same reason I don't have an Xbox One. It was holiday traveling. I did two holiday trips. I bought presents for all my nieces and nephews. And, you know, one thing leads to another. In December, that wasn't in the cards regardless. But in January and February, yeah, if there was a $250 weight Wind Waker bundle out there right now, I would be considering it. I would still rather just buy a $200 machine and then go buy the games that I want to get for it. I mean, Wind Waker, I loved the game in the day, just going right back and playing it. This gets into that other big conversation about how much do you really play HD remakes? I have a number of these things sitting in my shelves right now. And one of the ones that bugs the hell out of me when I go and look at it is I see Zone of the Enders and I'm like, oh man, I always wanted Zone of the Enders HD. I haven't played it.
I think we lost John temporarily. Hopefully we'll get him back real quick, but I'm glad he made
calls, then he can't get in.
I'm glad that he brought up the connection between the Sony situation from a few years ago, because I'm sort of the silver lining guy. I want to think positively about it. And is there any case to be made that making Nintendo, putting them in the desperate position leads to some really exciting stuff? I mean, we certainly saw that from Sony, that they really decided to, you know, take this generation and put a lot of new kinds of ideas into the mix and really try to be innovative and you know, in support of what gamers want. And that desperation can sometimes lead to the coolest stuff.
And sometimes can lead to a big interception.
Yeah. Oh, so, hey.
I would love to agree with you, Jeff. But my fear in that is Sony has a track record of excellent consoles. Since they've been in the console space, all of their consoles have been big hits with gamers. The PS3 took, you know, some coming around, but worldwide sales, it ended up on par, slightly above, or, you know, a little above Xbox 360. It was a successful console, right? Nintendo, while they've had amazing, amazing games, since the Super Nintendo, you know, they had the Wii, but that, I feel like, is the exception in terms of
poop on the GameCube.
I love it, but I'm saying it wasn't a huge sales success. It wasn't, and they've always had a stockpile of cash and they made money on their consoles. But I feel like this, you know, Nintendo's in a corner. Can they do something amazing? Like, and the car world, people have been saying that about Porsche, you know, letting one of their mid-engine cars take the throne from the 911. And every time a new car comes out, they're like, ooh, the Audi TT, will this force Porsche's hand to unleash the Cayman's potential? And I feel like Nintendo's the same. I know it's a different universes, but Nintendo, it's like every new console, like, this is the one that's going to make them commit to hardcore gamers. And I think Nintendo's said time and time again.
The Wii was a massive success, and it allowed them to get into this position. It allowed them to get a little complacent and feel like, oh, all we have to do is put out an upgrade to the Wii, and people already want it because of how much they wanted the Wii. You know, I think that generation really clearly Nintendo crushed. And I think in the same way that the PS2 crushed and allowed Sony to get into this position of feeling like, oh, when the PS3 comes out, all we have to do is, you know, it's $700, but people will get an extra job, yada, yada, yada.
Right.
You know?
I feel like the third party situation with Nintendo really reflects that it's neither ignorance nor arrogance. It's that they really are marching to the beat of their own drum and just don't have that sense of where the video game industry and the tech industry is in relationship to what people are doing in the broader scale, because they've been able to be outside of it for so long.
No, because I was like, so Garnett was talking about them beating to the, you know, their own drum. I think the problem is that whoever's banging the drum at Nintendo is like locked in a room and with absolutely no sight line or anything to the outside world. And I don't even think it's about the tech industry or what's happening in other. I think it's just people that they have completely lost touch with anyone outside of the. It's not even the gaming core audience anymore. Is they know what a Nintendo core audience is, and they've just sort of seem to have forgotten the things they need to do to bring, you know, to convert other people, you know,
and I totally think agree. And it seems like if they had the right person come in to be the new quarterback or coach or whatever analogy you want to make there, that they already, like, we know they have the pieces. It is like a sports team. We know that they've got the pieces to put on the field. They just have lost that key leadership component, and getting it back, I think they still have all of the plus marks in the pros column that they've always had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's an interesting comment in the IRC that I highlighted here from Ancillus, who said, I've never been interested in the Wii U, but I do like Nintendo games. Right now, I'm just not playing them. I want Nintendo to start reaching for the mainstream gamers again.
Yeah.
So it's like the I love Nintendo. Do you want a Wii U? Nah. You know, what is that about? I'm anxious to get to the phones and talk to people about that too. But I want to know what you guys think. Like, aside from sort of business strat, what do they need to do? I mean, they have, is it enough to just have awesome Mario and Zelda and have it be the Mario Zelda box? Are people going to come flocking when the cool Zelda game comes out on Wii U? Is that enough?
Well, we know that it is, but I think that what the answer that we want to talk about is, what do they need to do beyond that? Because we obviously want them to do more than that. They've sort of rested on their laurels with stuff before. So if they want to continue to do that, then okay. I mean, we all say, how long has it been since they had a new, you know, franchise, a new mascot, a new something special? It was Pokemon. And to me, there's a number of places they could still go with Pokemon. I mean, they did Pokemon Snap once upon a day, but that is such a rich universe, and there's so much more they could do with Pokemon that it would be great for them to even just consider expanding out of Pokemon as a first baby step. You know, if they're reluctant to go and try and make the next thing, then take the things that you have, which Pokemon gives you this huge universe to work from, and build on that.
Christian, you do not have a Wii U either, do you?
That's correct. That is correct.
What would be the game or the price point or what would it take to get you to buy one? Because you have an Xbox One and you have a PS4.
Correct. I have both of those. For me,
and it's not like you bought either of those for the games that are out on them right now, right?
The PS4 I did, well, no, that's true. I wanted a new console, and I have historically enjoyed the Killzone franchise. I know it's not people's favorites, but I've always had a lot of fun with it, and it was shiny and pretty enough that helped me justify the PS4 purchase. For me to get a Wii U, it would need to be, and I know it won't happen, it would need to be $150. It would need to be an impulse buy, because the person that I am and the time I have to play games, I just don't have time for a third console.
Why do you have time for the first two? Like, what is it that puts the Wii U in such third place for you?
So people talk about how Microsoft had so much negative press around the Xbox One coming out. I think, and they righted the ship on a lot of that, but that, you know, still hurt the purchasing decision for me. When I pre-ordered, I took the PS4 as my first plunge into next gen. The Wii U, I feel like, came out with a lot of negative press and nothing to get gamers excited about. Initial reviews of the software, it had this long update and there were no games that it was launching with. And I've been through that with I've owned every other Nintendo system at launch, and I've been through that drought. And, you know, I had my gaming PC up and running, you know, there were great games coming out on the other consoles still. So when it launched, you know, two Novembers ago, it wasn't a compelling enough device in terms of, it didn't have what you talk about, you know, the newest, shiniest, best tech to get me motivated as a tech nerd to take the plunge at day one. And then since then, it's like, since I didn't get in at that point, it's going to take a lot to get me motivated to buy it. I'm the same way with movies, right? Like Thor 2, when it came out in theaters, I was like, oh, that looks great. I don't have time to go see it opening weekend. And then each successive weekend that went by, the chance of me seeing it before it becomes free on Netflix just goes way down. That's the way I consume. So now the Wii U has hit that point where it's been maybe I will at some point, but it just slipped further and further down, that now, like you said, I own a PS4 and an Xbox One, that now it would take an impulse buy for me to get one in the house.
Garnet, I know you have to leave pretty soon. Is there anything that you need? I mean, other than, I used to keep saying price over and over, but it seems like the only reason it's price to me, a price discussion, is because of this feeling that it's not the newest, latest, best tech. That if it was the best tech, people wouldn't care about price. But because it's perceived as being less than anyway, then it has to be like, well, I'm not buying it to be my main console. It has to be my secondary console. Is that accurate?
Right. And I mean, I see what you're saying. And Microsoft has stolen a considerable amount of their thunder as far as being the connected television device with Xbox One. I mean, they've now pretty much asserted themselves as the owners of that territory for the console. So I guess what you're postulating is that really, the problem for me isn't price. The problem is that I look at the library and don't see enough titles to get me to jump.
Do you think it's also, well, I was thinking about it like when Christian was talking, it's sort of the Xbox One and PS4 for a lot of us, we were sort of investing in the future, right? Like we were investing in potential, and like we saw, you know, there's probably another 10 years ahead of us with this stuff, and these games look fantastic, and there's all this possibility of what's coming. And I think the problem with the Wii U is that on day one, we already knew what all the potential was. I don't think they're going to surprise us with anything.
Yeah. That's a really great point.
They're not creating that fantasy. They're not giving us future fantasy. Well, it'll be like
the potential for surprise. I think everybody saw in that controller. It's like, okay, that's where the surprise is going to be. In the same way that with the Wii, it wasn't the latest greatest tech. It was, oh, the surprise is in all these new ways we're going to interact with our games, and that's why a lot of people who weren't traditional gamers jumped into the Wii. It's like, oh, there's this new thing that lets me interact in a new way. And I think everybody put a lot of faith in Nintendo to show us why that controller was going to be that aspect of the sales pitch. And it just hasn't happened.
You know what maybe part of it is, Jeff, is a significant amount of Nintendo's effort, starting with Wii and then carrying over to Wii U, has been also facing to multiplayer in your living room. And to be honest, while I enjoy couch co-op a lot, it's a secondary thing. Most of the times what I want out of a game is a great game that I sit down with for, you know, that I carve out a 2-3-4 hour block and really sink my teeth into, and am playing, you know, by myself mostly. It's kind of a singular experience.
And well, that may be more of a age question though. I mean, because I've told this anecdote before, but my nephews came into town for Christmas, and they came in, my 9-year-old nephew came into town wanting a Xbox One for Christmas. And right. He played Mario at my house on the Wii U and left wanting a Wii U. You know, that's because he got to play with his little brother, and they sat in front of the TV, and he had the cool little controller in his hand, and like they dug it.
I was answering for me. I mean, we were talking about like what it would take for me. True, so then for me, I look at it and I'm like, okay, Pikmin 3, definitely, you know, when the day comes that a Wii U shows up in my house, Pikmin 3 will be number one, or at least in the number 1 to 5 slots of games that I pick up on it.
I can tell you this, Jeff, if the Wii U were on tech parity with the PS4 and Xbox One, there's no doubt in my mind that it would be my number 2 console. PS4 still would have been my number 1 because for me, I've enjoyed the Sony exclusives more, but then it would have been a no-brainer for me to go Wii U for the Nintendo exclusives, and then I would bounce third-party games between the two. But like you said, since I know it's not, and it never will be running those other third-party games on par, it slips to the third spot, and it makes it a hard purchasing decision.
All right. Well, I want to hear from the call-in audience. We've got a bunch of people on hold right now. Garnet, I know you have to go. Thank you so much for stopping in.
Obviously, we should do this properly in the future.
Indeed. You can hear Garnet and I talking about video games every week on Week in Confirmed. Garnet, where else can people see you and hear you?
You can follow me on Twitter at GarnetTlee, GarnetTlee, and future endeavors TBD.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you calling up.
All right. Great talking to you guys, John. Great talking to you. Yeah. We'll catch up soon.
See you soon.
Cheers, everyone.
All right.
Ciao.
All right. So we'll go to phones in a second. But first, we have to thank our sponsor for this episode, New Relic. What is New Relic? Well, New Relic is a software analytics company that helps make sense of billions of metrics across millions of applications all in real time. It's 2014, guys, and in 2014, the thing people are really focused on is seamless application performance across multiple platforms on all their devices. It sounds simple, but making an app work consistently on lots of different devices, all with different operating systems, running different types of software, is super complex. How complex? Well, in the old days, when we're talking like 2007 here, it was basically impossible for an app developer to know how his or her app was performing once it got shipped to production. In those days, developers would spend all of their time doing internal bug hunts and then eventually just crossing their fingers and hoping for the best. They'd sit around all day monitoring Twitter and app stores, eager to see how well their apps were doing or not doing. But those days are now officially behind us, and the reason is New Relic. New Relic lets us track our application performance down to the end user level all in real time. That means you can spot problems, find bugs, and fix code fast, way before users even notice anything is wrong. Do yourself a favor, check this company out. Go to newrelic.com/5x5. You'll get a special offer for a 30-day extended free trial. And that is newrelic.com/5x5. We thank New Relic for sponsoring DLC and supporting the show. And we hope you support them for doing so. All right, guys. I want to hear, we got a whole bunch of people on hold here. I want to hear what people want from Nintendo themselves. Zach, are we ready to go on the phones? I think so. I'm going to take... Great. Awesome. I'm going to take this caller. What we got? All right. Hello, caller. What would make you... Do you have a Wii U? And if not, what would make you want to buy one?
Hey, you can hear me, right?
I can hear you. Yes. What's your name?
Hey, Jeff. Hey, my name's Scott. And great job reading that commercial there. You always do a good job with those, Jeff.
Thank you. So what would make you want to buy a Wii U? Do you have a Wii U?
Actually, no, I don't. I have a friend who got one around launch, right when he was also, I was actually trying to push him to go the Xbox 360 route. And I was a little actually disappointed. I kind of wanted to play Halo with him and stuff. But no, I don't have a Wii U myself. But I was a huge Nintendo guy growing up as a kid. I had the Nintendo 64. I grew up a lot with the GameCube. And I enjoyed the Wii, but that's kind of, I think, where a lot of people were not as happy with Nintendo at that point. And I think that's kind of biting them in the butt right now.
So it's just nostalgia for you then. Is there a game or a price point, or is there something that would make you want to rush out and buy a Wii U, or is it a lost cause for you at this point?
Well, you know, there's a lot of games I would love for them to make that I just don't think they're ever going to make. I'm always there with Andrew Yun, and he talks about F-Zero GX. I love F-Zero GX. Mm-hmm. Just even thinking about the GameCube, it's not just the Zelda games, but even the things that they would make that people didn't really latch on to that I really enjoyed. But for me, even if they had a killer app that's coming out every single month, for me, it's not so much that. It's more the sort of vibe that I'm getting from Nintendo these days. I keep seeing in the news about Earthbound fan service being shut down, things with YouTube Let's Play videos. It's more... The way that they approach consumers, I feel like they don't quite respect me. And for how much I enjoy gaming, I feel much more safe going with Microsoft or Sony. Maybe Microsoft has been some debate there, but especially with Sony, all the ways that they reach out to gamers and to try to cater to them and listen to them, Nintendo doesn't do that anymore. And so I guess maybe it's a bit of a pride.
Go ahead. You said something really interesting there at the beginning where it almost seemed like you were saying, to some extent, the success of the Wii and it being a mainstream success almost hurt your opinion of the company. Like they became so popular for doing things that you weren't interested in that it almost took away some of your interest in what they'll be doing in the future. And I think I might kind of agree with that. It's like I don't begrudge them for their success, but they were so successful with Wii Fit and in games that I wasn't interested in playing, it almost took away from me the excitement of, ooh, what will Nintendo do this year? And I don't know if I thought of it that way.
That's interesting. That's certainly interesting. It certainly hasn't hurt Microsoft, the whole relationship with the consumer thing, these numbers
wise. They
did a little
though, right? I mean, well, not numbers wise, but I mean, people did get concerned about, oh, before we knew what the Xbox One was, and even when they announced that they would have a Kinect, there was backlash from core gamers, like, we don't want this thing, quit shoehorning it in, it's making your console too expensive. Granted, the Xbox One has sold well, but I think part of that is because Microsoft hasn't, abandoned isn't the right word, but hasn't moved away from core gamers as significantly as maybe Nintendo did. Like, they're still putting out, you know, these mainstream games, but yet with the Xbox One, they haven't done that yet, right? They haven't come out with their first party pitch for the casual gamer yet. It's been a lot of core games. They've pitched to the casual owner through their entertainment offerings. And I think that's a key distinction.
John, it seems to underscore your point, our caller's, and thank you for the call, our caller's point about it it being a larger thing than just software. It seems to underscore what you were saying about this being a corporate culture thing with Nintendo, that they really need a larger shakeup than just putting out some new games or slashing the price.
Yeah, I think they need someone there that has that thinks about the audience globally. And I think, you know, gaming now more than ever is truly global. There's, you know, and if you saw the stuff this morning about the top free-to-play games, I mean, it was, you know, stuff from all over the world. And it was a really good snapshot of, you know, the kinds of things that people like playing now. And I think just Nintendo just feels like they've lost touch and that they're like, well, we just got to keep making Mario. You know, it was funny because when all this Nintendo news broke, there was a lot of rumor that, well, Disney should just buy them, you know, because I think now when there's a big beloved franchise like Marvel and Star Wars and anything else, people just say, oh, Disney will buy them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the problem with Nintendo is that they are right now what Disney was 10 years ago when they were completely clueless. Remember when only Pixar was doing anything contemporary within the Disney empire? I mean, yeah. You know, they were doing things on the side that were very contemporary. I know when with Miramax and some of the sort of periphery stuff, but the core Disney business was totally out of touch with what people wanted to watch. And I think that's where Nintendo are now, and they need the same kind of shakeup to happen that Disney went through to get where they are now.
Boy, that's a really fantastic point. I think they're similarly situated in the sense that they're sitting on a whole bunch of cash. Yes, they've had 3 year over year down years, losing years, but they still are sitting on a whole mess of cash. And like Disney, they have the ability to leverage that kind of liquid asset into
buy their way out of this hole, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, well, let's take another call. I want to see what somebody else might have to say. Let's go with this 801. Hi, are you a Wii U owner? And if not, why not?
Hey, Jeff, John, Chris, how's it going? Yes, I am a Wii U owner. Santa Claus brought the Wii U to my house for Christmas, which was nice of him. I have 5 kids.
Oh,
and
wow.
I actually have 1 on the way, so I'm almost going to have 6 kids. And
wow.
There's 2 points I want to make. First of all, the Wii U name is very confusing. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, to my wife, my wife's like, hey, the kids have the Wii U on their Christmas list. Is that just like the Wii or what is that? Right?
Yeah.
And
right.
So I think Nintendo kind of slipped a little bit on the marketing because they needed to do something that set them apart, and that didn't really do it, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. And that's
a great
point.
I think another big thing is Garnett kind of was talking about this, was people don't want to play as much, I think, in their living room couch co-op as much. I love board games too, so I do that a lot at my house, and
man.
I have a lot of kids, so they play together, but I don't think that happens a lot. I don't know that Nintendo moved away from core gamers, just that they kind of didn't progress maybe as much as other ones. I feel like my kids are having an amazing experience with the Wii U. They absolutely adore it. Just yesterday, I had 4 kids ranging from age 5 to 13, all playing that Super Mario World 3D World together, which mm-hmm. is amazing, right? But I don't think that there are a lot of people that do that. I think
let me ask you this question.
You're going to see people who play it. Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Let me ask you this. Did you buy your Wii U for your kids or because you kind of wanted it too?
Both, all of it. I don't think I would have gotten it if I didn't have kids that wanted it. They had it on their Christmas list high up there. They kept talking about it. So I'm glad Santa Claus brought it. But I don't think if it would have just been me, I don't think I would have been sold on it. I think I would have had other experiences waiting for me, whether it be maybe a 3DS or maybe even a new Xbox game or something like that, that I probably would have preferred, I think.
All right. Well, thanks for that call. What do you guys think about this idea that online is really could be the way that Nintendo gets back in the game, making online a big priority and sort of catching up with the other two systems in that way?
I think
John?
It'd be... Oh.
No, you go
Sorry.
First, Christian. Go ahead.
I think it'd be great if they were able to do it. I don't know if they will, just in the sense that it's easy to say playing catch-up, and I'm not hating on Nintendo here. I think this applies to many industries. You know, people talk about when new competitors entered the tablet game. Well, once they catch up to Apple with the number of apps available on you know, a Windows tablet, then you'll have tablet parity. And that's not happening. Oh, once other car companies catch up to Toyota with, you know, hybrid MPGs, you'll have parity in that space. And, you know, I think what people don't realize is that it's not as if Microsoft just came out one day and was like, and here's Xbox Live. I mean, it started on the Xbox One, right? Yeah. And they've been tinkering with this and making it better and better and better each time, or, you know, trying, in their eyes, improving it. Some people might not like the changes and features or whatever, but it's not something you can just do. If it were that easy to do, I'm sure Nintendo would. I mean, John, do you think this is something that Nintendo can just flip a switch on, or that they can catch up on if they wanted to?
No, because, and I think they suffer from this problem worse than a lot of companies right now. And that is that, you know, I think people's expectations of what being online and connected and that whole ecosystem means is like, has moved so quickly. And when you look at, you know, you got to have Twitter integration and Facebook integration, and, you know, the PS4 doesn't output video to YouTube, and that's a pain in the ass, you know? And it's like, there's like things that we all, if we have a very connected life, have very specific expectations of what being connected actually means. And it's gathering all of these services together and making sure that it's really easy. And, you know, Nintendo still hasn't even got past letting us have our own name, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
they're so far behind. I mean, like, you know, the last time I had a number as a username was CompuServe in the early 90s. And it's like, you know, it's like they've got to wake up. And again, I know I keep banging on this, but they're just not paying attention to what real people actually expect out of something.
Yeah. But speaking of real, go ahead.
Oh, and I thought our caller brought up maybe that I thought was interesting is, couldn't, like, there are always young gamers coming, new gamers coming in, right? And are they interested in Wii U? The caller said, you know, his kids are ecstatic by it and having a lot of fun with it. But are new gamers interested in the Wii U because it's their first time with Mario Kart? Like, oh, I've played it 8 times, but someone who's 9 years old hasn't played it at all. And is it appealing for them, or... and it's something that maybe callers or people in the chat or, you know, via Twitter let us know. Or are people not interested in it? Do they think kids aren't interested in it because they can tell that their older brothers and older sisters aren't interested in it? You know, does that percolate down?
That's really important, actually, because, like, so, I mean, my kids are 10 and 8. And, I mean, we all know that kids aspire up in terms of ages, you know. And then, you know, a kid of 10... once it is counting down the days to when you'll let him play Halo and Call of Duty and, right, you know, all the stuff that is perceived as cool. And I think that, you know, there's a, with the way that Nintendo has approached its franchises, there's a built-in expiry date on when the younger audience is going to keep paying attention. And they've not done much to court anything beyond that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Let's go to another call here. We got someone from 267. What is your experience with the Wii U? Do you have one, and what would you want to get you one, to make you want to buy one?
Does Ludacris have any girls in your area code?
Hey, wait, am I on the air now?
You are indeed on the air.
Awesome. Hey, I'm John Tilton. I'm calling from Orlando, Florida.
Hey, John.
And I do have a Wii U, and I've had one since the summer, and I put off buying one forever. Same with the 3DS. I didn't buy either console, and I kind of wanted it. And then finally, I got a 3DS in the summer, and I was like, this is awesome. I got a ton of games. There's a good amount of stuff on it, and I loved it so much that I was like, man, maybe I should also get a Wii U. So I got one as well. And since that, I bought 7 games for it, and I love all of them. And I also, like, I have a PlayStation 4, PlayStation 3, Vita, and the 3DS. And the Wii U is definitely getting the most playtime from me right now. And I think that what I've noticed is, so I got, like, some party games too, and, like, I'll bring them over to a friend's house. And, like, every time I bring it in, people don't know what it is. Like, they think it's the old Wii U still. And I know the previous callers talked about this as well, but... on Weekend Confirmed, like, I know Garnet brought up that he thinks they should drop the tablet and drop the price, but I think, and the previous caller brought this up, I think they need to drop the name first and do a total relaunch with just a completely different name, because no one even knows that the Wii U is a different thing. And they had this whole moment where they were like, oh, we think, you know, everyone thinks this is a peripheral for the Wii, so we'll do a whole new campaign that says it's an upgrade for the Wii. But I think that is the same problem where everyone thinks, oh, I'm upgrading it. I can just add some, you know, $100 tablet and I have this thing.
So
but
let's
it's a new console.
Let's role play for a minute. You're Reggie. You're on stage at E3. You're walking out and you're debuting the new name for the Wii U. What would it be in 3, 2, 1, go?
Dolphin. I don't know. I was the only one that went.
ladies and gentlemen, Reggie, Dolphin.
I don't know. it's called the Nintendo Desperation. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. It seems to me so fascinating that everybody is bringing up all these different things. This is brand. It's a branding issue. No one's talking about games. It seems like they've got games. It feels like, yeah, the games are great, and which is so ironic to me because here we have these people rushing out, like myself, rushing out and buying the Xbox One, the PS4, and coming home and being like, well, there really aren't that many games for it. Well, we'll have to wait for the games, but man, I'm so glad I got this system. And it's like, well, there's a system where everybody's like, the games are great, but nobody wants to buy the systems. It's just so strange to me. And I think it comes down to that thing I've mentioned before, which is we've become a tech-based, gotta have the newest revision of the thing culture, and it's the Appleification of how we consume tech. And I think it has a lot to do with the fact that the Wii is perceived as being a step behind, and people, at least the early adopters, the people who are excited about buying new tech, that's what gets them going.
Well, I think John hit the nail on the head with that, and that the PS4 and Xbox One, these early adopters were buying in with an investment into the future. And with Nintendo being last gen tech, you know, aside from the inclusion of a tablet controller, that investment isn't there. And you want to know another system that has great games on it? The PS3 and the Xbox 360. Like, you know what I mean? That's the problem, is that when the Wii U came out and all the third party games, not all, but almost all the third party games were available on those other systems and comparable gameplay, and they were still coming out with games like The Last of Us, Bioshock Infinite, and so there was never this drought of games available to people, and I think that hurt it.
Well, there are a couple other stories to get to, and we need to do that, but I do want to, we got so many people on hold here, I do want to get to another, see if we can get to another couple of quick calls real fast. You're from 330 area code, what's up? Do you have a Wii U? What do you think of it? And what would make you want to buy one?
No, I don't, actually. I don't have any of the consoles. I just pretty much have Steam on my PC, and that's what I do all my gaming on. I do have a 3DS, though, and I kind of want to get back to your point about desperation, because it feels like the last few times at E3, every game Nintendo has brought out has been like, oh, here's Super Mario 3D World. That has the same mechanics from Super Mario Brothers 2. Here's the Link Between Worlds. That looks very similar to A Link to the Past. It feels like, for me, they're desperate, and they keep trying to go back to, well, what games worked for us before, and can we get that nostalgia bug to hit? And for me, it's just turned me off. You know, I'm one of the few people that did not like A Link Between Worlds. I didn't think the rental system worked.
Well, I think you're crazy, but that's a great call. I appreciate it. I think you're crazy for not liking Link Between Worlds because it's awesome. But I think you do make a salient point, which is, you know, how long can they tread on the same old franchises? I think one of the things that would, I mean, I already have a Wii U, but one of the things that would get me more excited is if they really introduce some new different kinds of characters and game experiences. I think if they invested in new IP, that would be really interesting.
I think there's an important point as well on the nostalgia thing that he brought up, is that when the original Nintendo Entertainment System came out, it wasn't a global phenomenon. I mean, I grew up in the UK and we just didn't have it. You know, we were playing on Commodore 64s and ZX Spectrums and Atari 400s, and like that early generation of consoles, I mean, it was there, but we didn't grow up with the sort of Zelda and Mario religion. And I can remember when I moved to the States, the just sort of fervor around these franchises kind of shocked me because, you know, back in the late 90s, if you expressed anything other than absolute reverence for a Zelda game, you would just get torn apart because it was like, this is, that's the Bible of video game design is Zelda. Yeah. And I think in relying on nostalgia that's that old, I think the other, this is where, now gaming is so global that they're suffering for that because there are people that were like, well, I don't have that as a frame of reference,
Yeah. And continuing on your Disney comparison, it would be as if Disney just kept putting out Mickey and Goofy and Minnie cartoons.
Yes.
And instead of, investing in these new things every single year where you have, these new movies coming out with new characters and new princesses and new this and new that. I think that that's a big part of it.
But what about, Jeff, like comic books? I think it's kind of a rock and a hard place, right? People are like, oh, man, you can never kill a character in comic books because, so spoiler alert, if you're not up to date on current comic books, Spider-Man, it looks like through teases that Peter Parker is going to come back and reclaim his body from Otto Octavius in the mainline Spider-Man book.
And people knew that was going to happen from the beginning of the arc.
Because you have to go back to Spider-Man, Batman, Green Lantern, Superman, a Wolverine, and people, we want new characters, but time and time again, sales show that these old characters work. I mean, there's Chirobi, Nintendo tried to, and he has a new game out on the 3DS. I believe, and people clamor for these new franchises, but the sales oftentimes don't back it up. And I think to introduce a new IP, you have to go full hog into it, right? And release it and never back down and throw all this promo money behind it. And I think the Disney analogy is a little different to some extent because new movies, come out every year. And Disney too now, through owning Pixar, has really latched on to the sequelization of those successful franchises. It's not as if they're only creating new IPs. It's just you're able to come out with several movies a year.
Well, it has to be both. Okay, we're going to move on to another topic. I'm going to take one last call on this topic because this guy's been on hold for 40 minutes. From 801 area code, what is your contribution to this Wii U debate? Are you a Wii U owner?
Yeah, I am a Wii U owner. My name is John, by the way.
Hi, John.
Another John, so that's good.
Hi, John.
Where are you calling from, John?
Las Vegas.
Vegas. Okay, so what made you buy a Wii U, and are you happy that you have one?
I've kind of always been a huge Nintendo fan. I bought my own Super NES when I was 11. Many 11-year-olds have done that, so that's kind of my dedication to the brand. And I've kind of owned everyone since. I bought it because, I'm a 5-year-old. I also want to get him into video games. And we have quite a few games on our Wii U that we cycle through. We do some Wii Fit U as a family, and we do some Wii U Sports Club, and we play 3D Land, which is freaking awesome. So I don't think games is the problem. I do think that kind of what you see with the Wii U is not only what everybody's talking about, but what I want is a unified account system across all my stuff. I want a Nintendo like Netflix subscription service where I can have all these virtual console games and I pay $8 a month and I dip into whatever one whenever I want. Because I would never miss that money. But right now I look at stuff and I think, well, I don't know if I want to pay $5 for Zelda's Revenge. But if I could just play it, I would play it.
Well, that is an interesting point, too. A lot of people have been talking about leveraging Nintendo's wonderful back catalog and doing a sort of, we're talking about what PlayStation Now might be, but doing something like that instead of making it all these a la carte purchases on the Wii Shop. For me personally, that's not that compelling. I'm not going to rush out and buy a console so I can play all the old games. I think there's lots of ways to play all the old games should I desire to, but I want new games. I want the new interesting experiences, and they can be with old characters, but for me, it's not just make this my old-timey Nintendo box. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I... I'm the same. I mean, I think it'd be interesting. I like the idea of it being subscription based, like PlayStation Now. I don't think I would necessarily take advantage of it. How about you, Christian?
I would like this. I think we've talked about it before, Jeff. I'm interested in this type of thing. I like snack gaming, especially. I think on Nintendo back catalog gaming allows snack type gaming better than better than going back and playing Resident Evil 2 for 10 minutes. Like jumping back and playing 20 minutes of Super Mario World is something that you can totally do and then put it away for a few months and then come back to it. Mm-hmm. I'd love for them to do this. I don't think it'll ever happen. So I'm not like wishing upon a star, but I think it'd be great.
A couple of other stories. I don't know. Christian, was that your story of the week as well?
So it seems like the consensus. It's the story of, well, the sub story. I think the biggest story out of all the Nintendo stuff is not stepping down and rethinking business strategy. But of course, it's all part of the big story. Outside of gaming, but still related to things we're interested in, the only other thing that gets close is Batman versus Superman being pushed back a year. And I don't know if that comes into consideration, but I think that's pretty huge.
Like 8 months, I guess it is. But yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's not gaming related, but yeah, you're right. It is, it's big news, I suppose. I mean, just the idea that they're going to go head to head with Marvel, theoretically in May, that's a big deal. Yeah, it's interesting. Why do you think that's the biggest story? Just because we're not going to get that movie until 2016 now?
Yeah, so I think you mentioned going head-to-head with Marvel. Potentially going head-to-head with Marvel is pretty big. And also, for me, it makes me a little more excited about the movie because I think they have time to maybe do some of the stuff right, hopefully, and not just rush out a script. I was a little nervous before that this movie gets announced. Then a writer gets it, like the movie gets announced, then the writers gets solidified and announced, and then casting comes out, and then they start shooting. Like, oh my God, that's so many red flags for a movie that I wasn't a huge fan of the first, like of Man of Steel. I was like, oh, no, you're rushing into this. Do it right. You're introducing Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman in one universe, and now you're just going to get this thing out and turn it around in what it takes to create a movie, and you're doing all of this? That's crazy. And I'm hopeful now with an extra 8 or 9 months that this can be done right and treat these characters, the holy trinity of DC, with respect. And that's why I think it's pretty huge news.
The Gru in the chat room says, when Arkham City Krypton comes out, you'll be excited. And I've been thinking the same thing. Like, can Rocksteady please make a Superman game and make it a brawler in the same way that Batman was? And I'm flying around Metropolis and, oh my gosh, I want that game. The other story that I wanted to bring up here is this DLC content for Call of Duty with Michael Myers in it. Michael Myers from the Halloween franchise. There's a mode coming to the new Call of Duty Ghosts DLC that allows you to play as Michael Myers running around with a hatchet in the woods, in the fog, with a cabin, slicing up, Marines, I guess. So I think this is kind of cool. I mean, we've seen zombie modes, you know, to eat the cows come home. This is an interesting progression of that. And I think it's kind of a cool thing. Do you guys like this sort of mashup idea of IPs, or John, what do you think?
Like the idea. I just didn't completely understand why Call of Duty was doing it. You know, I mean, it was one of those things where I was like, okay, well, that's sort of interesting. I quite liked the mode in Ghosts that was the replacement for zombie mode. I don't remember what it was called though. The one with all the alien things and everything. Everything's purple.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a fun mode. And I think, you know, they took that sort of horde mode idea and that just sort of like relentless waves of stuff while you're running from one thing to another. I think, you know, mixing that up a bit is fine. The most interesting thing about this news this week was that I actually discovered that Michael Myers' mask is actually a Captain Kirk mask. I didn't know that before this week.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah, they didn't have any money to actually make an original mask back then. They just got a William Shatner mask from the store and painted it white, and that was the terrifying person in your movie. It's so great. I think this is sort of, it falls in the same bucket for me as the Blood Dragon DLC for Far Cry. You know, it's like, I love this trend of taking these established systems, these established engines, and doing something a little silly with them and maybe throwing you into a, like, you know, I wouldn't want the Michael Myers original game. I don't think that it can stand up for a $60 retail game, but yeah, I'm in for trying it. I think it's a fun, you know, diversion and a fun mode. And I like this trend a lot. I think it's a really interesting.
And I think as a counterpoint to what we were saying about Nintendo, I don't think Activision and, you know, what you say what you will about the Call of Duty franchise. And I know there's a lot of people that don't like it, but there are millions and millions of people that do, is that they don't do things like this on a whim. Like, they would have researched the hell out of this to see if they were going to get the reaction that they wanted. And, you know, they're clearly confident that, you know, okay, we'll do a horror movie. A horror movie mode in the spring is a really odd
I know, that's funny, right? Yeah. Did we lose Christian, or is he there?
I think we may have lost the
Ansible. But go ahead.
I think so interesting, but it almost makes me want more. Now I wish that they had, because like you said, Call of Duty has done outrageous stuff before, right? I mean, you're playing as Richard Nixon killing zombies. You know, they've done crazy things. I would have loved for them to somehow included Freddy and Jason, and preferably Jason from Jason X, because I want Space Jason to come in during the space mode in Ghosts. And I think that would have been cool. Like, you're unleashing these three terrors, you know, running through the woods. But it's cool. It's fun and doesn't get in the way of the game. It's not as if, you know, OMG, Call of Duty multiplayer is ruined because Mike Myers. It's like, no. This is a fun thing that's bonus and extra, and you still have your core gameplay. And I'm all in favor of weird, quirky stuff like this that just breathes new life into a mode that maybe you otherwise wouldn't check out.
Right. I am too. It's cool. Okay. It is, it's almost tabletop time. But, first I want to talk about this little topic that Christian brought up as a what if, because, you know, we just got the, Academy Award nominations. We just had the SAG Awards the other night. We had the Golden Globes last week. It is award season in movie land. And it seems like the video game world has a real hard time making an award show that is worth watching, or is, you know, exciting. The VGXs, there are, you know, there are good points and bad points, but ultimately I think it turns into a lot of commercials for upcoming games or debuts of upcoming games, which is pretty exciting. But the awards themselves aren't what people come for. And yet people are, you know, tuning in by the millions to watch the Academy Awards and the Golden Globes. And those are a big deal. Is there a way? What if you could create the perfect video game award show? What would you do? Is there a way to make a video game award show that is compelling to watch? What say you, Christian Spicer? You're the one who brought this topic up. So what do you think?
Yeah, I think there has to be. And like you said, the parallels. Imagine if you were watching the SAGs or Golden Globes or Oscars, and 80% of that program was trailers for upcoming movies and not as commercial breaks. Like, that was the program. Like, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the stage Johnny Depp. And Johnny Depp walks out and he's like, guys, are you ready to see the trailer for Gravity 2?
I know, right? Yeah.
And then he walks away. And I don't think a video game award show will get right now the same viewership as a Golden Globes or especially an Oscars, because gaming isn't as mainstream yet as Oscars are. A lot of people watch the Oscars and those award shows just for the red carpet fashion, because it's stars they know and recognize. So I think, you know, you have to know going in that you're not going to get that same level of viewership. But I think to do something like the BAFTAs, like a real awards, people that means something, and presented in a way that's respectable to the industry and to the people making the games, and then also entertaining to watch. I mean, I think for starters, you can hire Jeff Cannata to do the show. And maybe
I'm available.
Some of his wacky co-hosts that have been on other projects with him. I think that's
box office poison, sir.
the key, I think, is to do it in a way that respects the industry. And I've certainly, you know, we've all made dumb jokes of, like, taking pop shots at gamers in general. But I think to be the thing, the award show that's holding itself out as celebrating the industry, and then to have people come up and be like, the game that's most likely to make you eat Mountain, drink Mountain Dew and eat Doritos and sit in a smelly, farty apartment goes to, like, stop that. Like, it's a thing, treat it with respect, and you can still have cool celebrity guests and stuff like that, but hold the industry you love in high regard. And I think that's the first step. John or Jeff, what would you guys
John,
do?
John, you're a guy who has been in charge of magazines that have done awards, and mm-hmm. I'm sure you've been in discussions about, you know, what make awards compelling. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, when I was at GameSpot, we live streamed the GDC awards and the DICE awards. I think part of the problem, as well as that, you know, there's a tendency to trivialize when stuff is being aimed at a larger audience. But I think the games business itself doesn't do itself any favors, and that it doesn't prepare any of its talent for this kind of attention. And as a result of that, sort of deflects it. You know, like, the games industry is very aggressively marketed, and you know, there's a very tight PR leash on a lot of people. And I think there just isn't I thought the Golden Globes this year was a cool thing to watch, because everyone was a little untethered, you know, like they were just saying what they thought. I mean, some of it was just mm-hmm. dumb, but video games is not going to have a Jennifer Lawrence moment, you know, where right. she just says something really cool. And like, there are people that we all know that, you know, if you put them on TV, they will say something, you know? And I think,
It's as if it was an entire awards night for just like the best sound editing guys.
Yeah.
You know?
it's like you need to let these guys off the leash a little bit, or you need to school them so that they're not just spouting PR lines. It's like, I was when I got in this morning, I was just sort of scanning through Twitter, and there was still all the aftermath of the stuff yesterday from, you know, the very end of the 49ers game. And Tyler Blazinski, who was the founder of SB Nation, said something really interesting, and that was that he would, even though it was not cool, it was far more interesting than the boring stuff we get from a
Both
lot of
Both teams
people.
Played hard. Both teams played hard.
Who cares? Yes, of course you're going to say that. Say something interesting. And every now and then, someone will be obnoxious. This is why I always loved David Jaffe, because he would always speak his mind. And very often
he still does,
because he's not very often on someone's leash getting reined in. And he will, you know, and I think he's experienced enough now that he knows when he's taking it too far himself. And mm-hmm. I think the movie and music business has been much better about, like, schooling their talent, and not just the actors, but the directors and the producers and just anyone that's got their name on something. And I think gaming is still reluctant to put names on things. And we're not going to have a good award, because award shows are about people as much as products. And until gaming gets better at that, you know, we're great at it in the indie scene, but in the AAA, like, you know, the stuff, you know, the really big budget stuff, we're just not getting the people put in front of us very often.
Man, that is such a great point. I want to go to a call now. This guy's been on hold for over an hour from the 949. Thanks for holding. And what do you think about a video game awards show? Is it something that you would tune in for? What do you need it to be? Do you fall asleep? It's been an hour. I wouldn't doubt that. Or maybe we don't have the Ansible back. I got word that the Ansible was back. Okay, we'll try a different call then. How about from the 480 area code? What do you think about an award show? Can you hear me? Nope, guess not. Okay.
Hey, Jeff, this is a caller from the 480. I just wanted to call and say that I think you should be the host of a video game award show, and I have $40 million to make the show happen. Call me after the show. Thanks, man. Bye. Wow, what a great caller.
That is a great caller. What do you think, Christian? This idea that the personality needs to be, I mean, we don't have tons of people. I mean, I can probably pick five on my hand, you know, Tim Schafer and Cliffy Blazinski and Dave Jaffe come to mind, but there aren't a ton. I mean, this isn't an industry that is full of you know, larger than life personalities, or even people that are captivating to listen to per se.
And
is that problematic?
It's something that would need to be worked through, yes. I mean, I think John's point is a fair one, but I also think types of people that are maybe drawn to programming and developing video games aren't the same people that are drawn to being in front of a camera and being a star. I don't know if a programmer or developer wants seeks that stuff out, or is an introvert or an extrovert. I mean, an extrovert the same way that an actor might be. The same thing might be true of a director. Might not be wanting to be in front of the camera and whatever. But I think there are more personalities in the gaming world, and especially, as John said, if we started to give them prominence, the usual argument back is, well, games are made by huge teams and you can't just put one person's name on it. And I respect that games are made by huge teams, but so are movies. You know, like my little brother worked on the Avengers and some other high profile Marvel movies, but you don't know it unless you sit there and scour for his name in the credits, right? Like, but that still is led by Joss Whedon. It's not as if we don't put a name on it. And I think we can do that in gaming. And I think there are other people. I mean, I think to some extent, Reggie's become a personality. Kojima, Amy Henning, is that her last name? Mm-hmm. I apologize to Naughty Dog fans if I said that wrong. People.
Let me give you my pitch for what an awards ceremony would be. And you're so kind to suggest me hosting it. But if I were going to host it and I was given carte blanche and whatever I wanted, first call that I would make would be to the Area 5 guys. If anybody's watching Kickstarter right now for Outer Lands, the video game documentary that they're doing, by the way, which I highly recommend you check out and contribute to if you're into that stuff. These guys handle their video game content in such a reverent, mature, interesting, sophisticated way. It's almost like watching an NPR or PBS documentary, and there's love. It permeates everything that these guys put out. And I think you could step away from the idea of doing a live award show for video games. It doesn't have to follow exactly the Hollywood model, and you can have a pre-produced award show. You NDA everybody for who wins whatever, so that it's a revelation when it's broadcast, but have these produced packages that not only give an award to these people, but explain what they do. That it's a little, that each award is almost a mini documentary, a 5-minute documentary about what they do, how their job works, what it is to be a game producer, what it is to be a level designer, what it is to be an audio engineer, how all these things contribute to making games, and get a peek behind the curtain a little bit to see what those professions are, rather than just sort of the glitz and glamour of, well, this game had the most explosions, so it has best sound editing. It's like, I think that would be a fascinating, interesting, reverent take on games, and make the award have context, and you see, oh, well, this team got that award because this is how they work. I thought the most interesting part of the VGXs were when you got to see these development studios create their own little videos to accept the awards. And I think that take that even further and make an entire award show that is just a series of vignettes that are analyzing different aspects of what it is to make a game.
I think that's amazing. And I think that just further justifies my reason to have you be in charge of this thing and host it. That I hadn't thought of it, but that is, dare I say, genius. To me, it kindles memories or thoughts of the ESPN documentaries 30 for 30, where it's like, Yeah, it's about sports, but I don't know anyone that's watched the especially the really good ones of those and been like, oh, I don't like sports, I'm not interested in, the Bo Jackson story. Oh yeah, sit down and watch it. Or gaming analogies, indie game the movie is everybody loves that. Even if you're not into gaming, it makes people interesting. And by the same token, King of Kong, right, takes a super nerdy thing and makes it awesome and compelling. And I think doing that for an award show is a fantastic idea. I love it.
Thanks, Christian. That's why I keep you around.
Is it? Okay.
All right. I'm going to go to a call. I want to try one more time. If this doesn't work, we'll abandon that. But I think we're up and running now. So caller from 412, are you there?
I'm here, Jeff.
Yes, excellent. So what do you think about a video game award show? Is it a worthwhile endeavor, or should we just award games on websites and, in magazines?
Well, I think the big challenge with an award show is, like, how do you decide what's, like, the governing body that gives the definitive award? Because, you know, there's, like, you know, there's going to be 10 games that are going to come out with Game of the Year editions in 2014, and it's like, well, by whose authority? So I love your idea, what you just said there, but I wonder, so if you could keep going, how do you come up with that just kind of authoritative, you are Game of the Year sort of thing?
John, do you have an input on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that has been a big part of why we're sort of in the mess we're in, right? I think everyone, and I think part of it is that there are a lot of different bodies, even outside of media. I mean, you've got, like, you know, all the websites and magazines do one, and then you've got the DICE stuff and the GDC Developers Awards, and, you know, it needs to coalesce a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. I don't have much insight into how they actually do the VGXs. I know a lot of people that had a vote, and a lot of them were games journalists. So there is a group that has been cobbled together by, you know, Jeff Keighley and whatever, but I'm not exactly sure how that group was decided on. So I don't really have much insight into that, but I think hopefully, ideally what you would do is something similar to how the Academy Awards has an academy, that there's this group that's made up of people who make the things and people who consume the things and people who review the things, and that, you know, it's a tricky proposition, certainly, but I think there's a way to do it. Let's take another call. We got somebody on hold from 412. What is your take on the video game awards show? Okay, lost him. Let's go to another one. 602, you are online and live on DLC. What's your take on the Video Game Awards show?
Well, you know, I saw the VGXs. I had never seen any of the VGAs before. I thought it was, you know, okay, but it needs to have something done to it, you know?
Yeah, so what would you do? Any ideas? What does it need?
It needs to take it more, not just for gamers, but just more so someone who's maybe a gamer who wants their friends or their family to sit down and watch it to say, hey, this is cool or interesting. They can see it and appreciate it at least half as much as the guy who's interested in gaming.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think it's a treacherous path to go down the cool route too far. And I think some of the gaming shows that we've seen, award shows we've seen, I've gotten a little caught up in being cool. Another rule that I would institute immediately, were I given the power, would be a dress code. I would institute a dress code. I'm not talking tuxedos and dinner gowns, but it's got to be a little bit more than hoodies, you know, and sweatshirts.
No crooked ball caps and sideways Beats by Dre's.
Exactly. I think it's, you know, you got to dress for the impression that you want, and the impression that you give is, you know, we're too cool for school if you're dressing like that. So I'd sound like an old fuddy-duddy perhaps, and mostly because I used the word fuddy-duddy, but
you know, I'm a fan of people wearing suits on video game shows. I don't think
indeed we are we're pioneers in that area, Christian, I believe.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We got oh my gosh, what is it? It's tabletop time. Tabletop time. I think it's tabletop time, guys. Tabletop time. Who's with me?
Is that TTT?
Yeah. Okay. Time to get into a little tabletop. John, have you been playing any board games, or are you into that?
Have
you gotten into that?
My brother, who some of you might know, he writes for US Gamer, Pete Davison. He's been around video games a long time. He, since my kids were born, has been on a mission to ensure that they are schooled correctly in good board games. So every birthday of mine and theirs and Christmas, he sends us a board game. And the most recent one he sent us was Formula D. Have you ever played that?
Oh, it's one of my favorites. It is a
Which
fantastic
I thought was just
game.
Fascinating that it's a racing game board game.
This is a game. It started its life as Formula Day. It was a Dutch game, and then there's a more North American version, Formula D. It is a wonderful game, specifically because of the pure number of players you can get on at a time. This is one of my go-to games for when I have a lot of people over and they want to understand why I like German board games and designer board games, because you can load up the board with a whole bunch of people. I think you can play up to 12, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead. I'm stealing your thunder here. But
No. You go ahead. You probably played it more than I literally just got it this week. It was.
For a treat then. It's fantastic. You know, a lot of the designer board gaming fans have a low opinion of what we refer to as roll and move games, which are basically the games that everybody grew up with, right? Monopoly and Clue and Parcheesi, all these games where you roll a die and then you move across the table that number of spaces. These are what most people think of when they think of board games. And for most of us that really dig designer board games, that's kind of the enemy, right? Is like, oh, roll and move. It's just so simple. There's nothing to it. And most of the designer board games out there that I love don't use that mechanic at all. So a lot of people who think of board games are like, well, really that? This game, Formula D, shows you that you can make roll and move phenomenal, addictive, and strategic. And the reason for that is because it is basically a simulation of formula racing, although the Formula D Asmodee edition, you can flip it over and do like a streetcar race on the other side of the board, which is cool. But anyway, you have the ability to shift every time you move, and you have these cool little gearboxes that the game comes with a little plastic peg stuck in them. And when you shift in your gearbox, it changes the die that you roll. And so the game comes with, I think, 5 or 6 different die that allow different numbers to come up. So when you are in a higher gear, as you would in a car, you can go farther because the die has higher numbers on it. Now, the real challenge comes into the fact that there are these turns that you have to make that will require you to make a stop a certain number of times within the turn. So if you are in too high a gear and you roll a number that's too high and you go past the turn, it starts to break down your car, and you're constantly playing this game of balance between how far can I push my car before it explodes in a fiery crash of liquid death, which is actually really close to what an actual race car driver does. They're trying to see how far they can push their car and what they can do, how they can, you know, massage their racing line to get to the fastest way to go without breaking their car. This is a phenomenal experience. I love it. And it really is one of those things that's super easy to teach. You can get people that don't really know anything about designer board games into it really quickly and play a whole bunch of people at a time. It's fun moving a little race cars around a track, and it's a concept that everybody gets, right? You're trying to be the first one across the finish line. So I think you're going to have a blast with it.
What I enjoy about this game is that it seems to handle having the ability to have people come back and quote unquote steal a win late in the game without it feeling like rubber banding the way video game racing games often do. And I don't know how you can incorporate that in the video game world, but it is because you go into those turns and you think that you have this wrapped up, and then you come down the home stretch, and it's not, I feel like it's not uncommon for someone in third to get a good roll and take the game. And I think games like that are always exciting versus like the type of game you're talking about, Jeff, like a Monopoly, where a few turns in, someone owns half the board and you're like, well, we have 3 more hours of me losing all my money. Sweet.
Yeah. So the game I wanted to talk about in tabletop time this week is one of the games I'm enjoying most recently, and that is Last Will. It's by Vladimir Suchet, I think it's pronounced, and it's released by Rio Grande Games. And one of my favorite movies when I was a kid growing up, I used to watch it over and over on VHS, was Brewster's Millions. And if anybody remembers Brewster's Millions, it's a Richard Pryor movie with John Candy.
Because I'm old.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, welcome to that club. It was a great concept. The idea is that Richard Pryor finds out that he was the illegitimate son of this billionaire, and he has been left a whole bunch of money. But the billionaire has decided that money corrupts, and he wants to show his son that, and he's going to do it by making him spend money until he hates spending money. So the idea is that he can get $50 million or he can spend $50 million in 1 week to get $500 million. So the idea is he has to spend all his money without having anything to show for it after a week and not tell anyone what he's doing. it's a really fun concept for a movie, kind of silly, but really fun, and it captured my imagination as a kid. And this, Last Will, is the board game equivalent of that story, where you have money when you start the game, and the winner is the person who has zero money or is in the most debt at the end of the game. And the cool part of the it's a very strategic, very cool concepts, but basically the way you play is you can hire different people, do different things that cost money, or invest in certain properties and the stock market, right? So you have those options every time in every turn. So you're trying to do what other people aren't. And it's really fun because you can spend a whole lot of money on a building and then make sure that building depreciates in value and then sell it for a loss. But everybody else at the table is trying to manipulate the market in their own way so that your properties go up in value and their properties go down in value. So you're constantly competing about, you know, how to manipulate the market correctly so that everybody else gains money and you lose money. Meanwhile, you can do fun things like spend money on a big night out on the town, and you can take your dog with you as your companion, so it costs even more money and you look ridiculous to the town. It's really silly, it's really fun, but it's really strategic, and the systems interlock in such a fantastic way. This has been one of the best games.
How do you track the economy in it? Is it like Monopoly money, and you have to sort of like hand it over, or are you keeping track of your budget?
You do have coins and money in the game, but you're also doing it in as far as like what. You have there's a track around the outside that a lot of these games have to show where you sit at any given time. And so where you are during the game might not necessarily be where you'll be at the end. And you're manipulating the market so that, yes, this house that I have right now is worth, you know, $30 million, but I can do certain things within the structure of the game to make it worth zero. And so, or negative money, I can lose money on it. So you're never really, just looking at people's physical holdings doesn't necessarily give away what's going on. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. I love it. And there's at least one and maybe two expansions already out for it, which I've heard make the game even better. I haven't had a chance to try yet, but it's one of the games I've enjoying most lately. So that's Last Will, and it's from Rio Grande Games, and you can check it out on, you know, Board Game Geek or whatever. Anybody else got any things you want to hit before we wrap this puppy up? No.
The only other thing, Jeff, and this can be quick or not at all, is just about, you know, you have an excellent board game collection. We have talked offline about the fact that I'm moving to a new place in LA, and I'm going through what I call the Purge 2 is already in production. So this is the Purge 3 coming out very soon, unfortunately. And it's looking at my board games and my video games and thinking, what stays, what goes? And you're very much cult of the new when it comes to video games. How do you handle that stuff with board games? And you've moved not too long ago. You know, what do you keep and what don't you keep? And, you know, and John, you know, with kids, I have one kid, you have two. Like, how do you stockpile all that crap? And when do you know just to let go?
Yeah. Well, every now and then my wife is like, you know, we just need to go through and like get rid of all this stuff. And then we have this decluttering project, which seems to make the house even messier than it was before. we were successfully able to pare down movies and music. Video games has been hard. A lot of my old ones are in the garage. Board games just take up a lot of space. That's the big problem with them. I would love a larger collection, but I don't really have anywhere. I mean, I love the shelves in your place, Jeff, where you have you have them on bookshelves displayed.
Well, I'm very fortunate that my fiance allows that to be public.
Yeah, so that's the key, right? Like my wife, a lot of that kind of stuff is, I get the sort of, no, that's not going in the living room reaction. You know?
Right.
And statues and things. I have this like fantastic, I had the Skyrim special edition dragon that I wanted to put out. No. That's in my closet right now.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, I also have a closet that is overflowing with the crap that I should really get rid of that I don't have. Christian, I have a question for you. I saw you hashing this out on Twitter. What was your end decision on the Rock Band plastic instruments conundrum of 2015?
Yeah, so I am keeping a modified full set, which is two guitars, one set of drums, and one mic. Most people replied, keep it. A few said don't. Nicole Z, who, you know, game fans may know from her guest stops on Weekend Confirmed, when she was at, not Game Trailers. Why am I? Show doesn't exist anymore. Channel's gone. Cable channel. Anyway, she's wonderful person. G4, there it is.
I was going to let you just drift in the wind as long as possible on that one. Go ahead.
She replied, keep it. And I said, but they take up so much space. And her, this is the best reply. A million gold stars. She said, so do memories. Rock Band makes memories. And then what really lent me to keeping it is I Googled it, and those instruments go for a good chunk of money. And I don't plan to sell them to make money, but that made me think, holy crap. If I ever want to play this game again, it might be hard to get these things.
Honey, it's an investment.
No, it would be to play them again. And I'd either have to go raid whatever secret landfill that they're all in next to E.T. or keep them. And I was maybe going to get rid of mine and then plan another double jump show so that I could get some more of yours.
all mine are gone, bro. I went all in on giving those away.
Yeah, I am keeping them, and hopefully I don't regret it. But I can always give it away later, right? I mean, that's what I say about everything in my garage. What, the limited edition Spider-Woman scroll edition three-quarter bust that I have? I can always give that away later. I mean, it's just in the garage. No one has to see it. Oh my god, I have so much stuff, you guys. It's the worst.
Well, on that note of memories take up space as well, this show has now become a memory. But I want to thank John Davison from First for Gamers for hanging out with us the entire time. And thank you to Garnet Lee for hanging out with us at the beginning of the show. John, where can people see your stuff, and what should they be aware of?
So First for Gamers is a live messaging community app about video games, which you can download for your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. The download link, probably the easiest way, rather than have you hunt around on the stores, is if you go to the URL frst.it, there are buttons to download both. So please do that and come join and chat live with us. About video games, and then
we got to set up a DLC thread on First for Gamers.
You have an account. You have a verified account on First
for
Gamers.
I do. Yeah.
You were one of the first, actually.
First for Gamers.
Yeah. So we launched that in September, and it's been going really well. Over the holidays, we got a nice pickup, and it's been really nice because it's a global. We have people all over the world. We have people in Australia, across Asia, Europe. There's a lot of people in the US. So there's chat. And the format of it is sort of like is more. It's not like a forum. It's more like a live chat app, like Instant Messenger or something. So it's chat bubbles, and people can drop screenshots and videos and stuff into the chat. So it's been good. Sort of like it's very different than the kind of way that I've sort of dealt with audience on websites and magazines. It's very direct. So it's been fun. And outside of that, you can follow me on Twitter at JWHDavison, which is DAVISON.
Very cool. Thanks again to Garnet Lee for hanging out. Thanks to all of our callers this week. Very cool you guys tuned in live and called. You can do that every week. We're on Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific at 5by5.tv/live. Or if you want to download the show, hopefully you already have. Otherwise, how would you be hearing this? 5by5.tv/DLC. Christian Spicer, where can the people see you this week or hear from you?
Man, I don't know. Some other thing. This week is a blur. This week is moving week. This week I'm in purgatory. You can hear episode 4 or just came out of the stand-up comedy podcast and live show I do on the Nerdist Network called What's New. It was a great, great show. Dan St. Germain, Streeter, Seidel popped by, who people might know from College Humor and the fantastic Prank War videos he did, came and did a set. Fahim Anwar, Zoltan Kassis, so awesome. It's on iTunes. You can just search for What's New with Christian Spicer. And then people not in LA, people are always like, you always say what you're doing in LA. I don't live in LA. The 29th, I'll be in San Diego. I'm bringing my UCB show, Improv versus Stand Up, down there for the San Diego Comedy Festival. And then February 14th, 15th, and 16th, I'll be in North Carolina for the North Carolina Comedy Arts Festival. I'll be doing some sets there and bringing Improv versus Stand Up there as well. And I'm looking, it looks like maybe a March or April, I'll be in New York City doing stand up, most likely at UCB, and then a few clubs around town. So pay attention to that. But if you are in LA, you should go see Jeff Cannata in his new play. That is amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, that opens January 24th, which is the end of this week. So that's a little scary, but it's really going to be fun if you guys get a chance. If you like theater and you're in LA, this is maybe the coolest thing I've ever done. It is a spectacularly theatrical, fun, wild romp of a play called The 39 Steps, based on the Hitchcock film, and is playing at the Norris Center, and then it moves to Palm Springs. You can find that information out at jeffcannata.com. That is with two N's and one T. Also, if you're not able to listen live and contribute that way, we do have an email address. You can email us, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. That's dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your comments and questions there as well. Of course, what DLC can stand for, we heard on Twitter this week from at Glowing Spider that DLC is designed by lobotomized cows. So that's one suggestion. So thanks everybody for listening. We will see you next week. And until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.